Welcome to the Bridging Success Podcast. I'm Bo Jenkins, founder and CEO of BridgeNet Technology Consultants, where we solve challenging technology issues for growing businesses. We are the leading customer-focused, community-involved expert technology consultants. Welcome to the Bridging Success Podcast, the podcast where top B2B CEOs and executives share their insights, challenges, and game-changing strategies that drive innovation and business growth. I'm your host, Bo Jenkins, founder and CEO of BridgeNet Technology Consultants. Each episode, we spotlight visionary leaders shaping the future, diving into critical decisions, leadership philosophies, and breakthrough moments that have propelled them to success. On this episode, we're joined by Rick Williams, founder and managing director of Williams Advisory Partners, where he's dedicated to helping others succeed. Rick, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, Bo, it's great, great joining you, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Your journey spans some very interesting roles, from physicist to CEO to consultant and board leader. Is there one reflection point in your career that you can pinpoint where technology maybe it either really threw you for a loop or it helped change the trajectory of your career goals?
Boy, you're asking somebody whose entire life, early career was focused on technology. I my original training was in science and physics, and then I went to work for a major aerospace company developing very sophisticated photo-optical systems that we were putting up in space and all this sort of stuff. And I then went on to business school where, you know, a lot of people would say, oh my gosh, that's, you know, going over to the dark side. What does it have to do with science and technology? So I've kind of seen both sides of it. And, you're asking a good question, which I'm not sure if I'm going to answer it exactly the way you're meaning it, but in a way, my training in science, and the physical nature of science leads me to believe that if you're involved in any business operation, that part of what you need to be doing is really understanding why your business system works the way it does. I think the discovery is an important element of leadership, and it's why I recommend that. Haven't talked about it yet, but the book that I wrote that just came out, Create the Future, really focuses on the discovery process of good decision making. And I can go back and talk about technology and how it's driving our culture today, particularly in communications and data and AI and all of that. But the audience that I'm usually talking to are business leaders, and I think that's largely who your audience is. And I'm encouraging business leaders to think not just, oh, gee, what's the next incremental thing I have to deal with on my table, but if they're thinking about where their company is going to go, or any organization or nonprofits, the same is true for governments, nonprofits, for-profits, understand what's really happening in the world around them that shapes the viability of their business from a strategy point of view or a business model. How do they make a profit, impactful services to their clients? And those are the principles of science and technology that I think you and I and others bring to the business world that can be very valuable to leaders of all organizations. It's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but I'll at least start that way. And you're going to say, Rick, yeah, you're just being a politician and talking too much. And I'll say, maybe that's a little bit true here. But
you did a number of good segues into some other things. I want to talk about your book. We'll get to that in a second. For sure. We have a bunch of parallels in common. I too am an engineer by education that turned to business and got my MBA. So we both made that switch in our career. Can you tell me about a pivotal moment maybe in your career that shaped your philosophy on leadership? And we'll take that conversation then, and I'll ask you a question about the book.
Sure. No, I, okay. So I'm thinking about after I was at Harvard Business School, I then worked for Arthur D. Little, a big international consulting firm. And I think of my experience at ADL, Arthur D. Little, as really a transformative one for me because, we as if we're particularly with we're younger and getting into our careers, if we're in science, technology, engineering, we're expectation on us is that we're going to be the experts. We know the exactly the right thing to do. The people are paying us to say, okay, I have this problem. Tell me exactly what the right solution to this is, and sort of proving that we are right, that we're the expert, that we're kind of the smartest person in the room, is the core of our early training in technology. I think what you find is that when you go to the next stage in your career where you become a leader, not of where you become responsible for the work of a lot of other people, that you have to stop trying to be the smartest person in the room, that you have to learn to say, well, maybe I really don't, I'm really not the greatest expert in, the areas of manufacturing or marketing or sales or finance or whatever it is, that I have to open myself to say, well, maybe I should be listening to other people who actually might know more about this topic than I do. And then incorporate their expertise and experience into the decision making that I, as the leader, it could be a department or a group or a team of any sort. I mean, the same is true of a professional basketball or football team. And in a way, I know you're asking me, well, what's the technology that's changing? If you look at AI today, as an example, AI is a word that we all know the word, but aren't really sure in many cases exactly what it means. And I as a leader, or you as a leader, have to say, okay, assuming you're not an AI expert, have to say, yeah, what does this really mean for the work that I'm doing? And how is it going to change the way that I do my job, that this company operates as a competitor in the marketplace, as a where are we going to make profits in the future? What I'm encouraging people to do is open themselves up to learning what AI or any other transformative technology means for them. Not assuming that they in fact don't really understand the implications. I'm amazed to hear when I'm talking to people who have set up new companies to to detect fraud in insurance financing. I learned about heard the story about a company that is selling solar panels. And the difference between their ability to use AI in their initial customer interactions with people, where the company already knows just by being able to draw information off the internet about every single person that's calling them to ask about the potential for solar power panels for their home. You would never have thought that AI would be doing things like that, but it is. So that is, and the companies that are saying, what could the power of AI do for my company, are the ones that are going to win in the marketplace.
I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah. So you got a very diverse background. I mentioned some things we have in common. We also have a love for the open sea in common. You touched a little
Okay.
bit. You touched a little bit on this topic here, but I read your blog about the sailing trip you took through St. Vincent and the Grenadines. How can we translate those nautical lessons that you learned from that blog post into organizational takeaways to help us become better leaders?
Well, I've actually written an article which hasn't been published yet, but
Okay.
hopefully will be shortly. That I think that I mean, at least the title I'm using of it is Everything I Know About Leadership I Learned on My Sailboat.
Awesome.
And apologize, I'm getting a phone ringing there. Anyway, as I said, the title is Everything I Learned About Leadership I Learned on My Sailboat.
I love it.
And I think that in a way, it's saying that if you're going to sea, and this could be just going out on your J24 and out in off of Galveston or down near New Orleans or Lake Pontchartrain where you are, that you have to be prepared for what's going to happen that day with everything that's already on the boat and your team that's available to you. You can't say, "Oh, gee, well, I maybe I'll go back to the hardware store and get something, or send off to, to order some new lunch or beer for the afternoon." You have to be completely ready. So it's preparing the boat, it's preparing the sails, it's preparing the team, getting the right team together, and then once you're actually out on the water, you have to think about. It's exactly the way you think about a business. Okay, what is our strategy for the day against the wind, the currents, to be the fastest we can around the whole race course? But then also, that's strategy. And then secondly, how are we going to compete against the other boats in the race against us? Are we really good at doing fast maneuvers, or are we really good at sailing in a straight line as fast as we can? And how are we going to compete against these other boats? So it's both strategy and then business tactics competing against the other boats. And then once the race starts, all of everything you would be thinking about in a way is kind of, all right, that's history. Now what do we really do? And so you need to be able to effectively lead your team in competition and draw on the team. I find that I, as a, I'm going to say a skipper, particularly in longer races, I can do helming for part of the time, but there's only so long I can do it. I have to rely on the team I put together to carry the success of the boat for a longer period of time. We did last year, we did the Newport to Bermuda race, which was 4 days sailing in the Atlantic Ocean, a lot of it away from any kind of, away from the Coast Guard range of rescue, that we had to be able to survive and compete on our own without help from anybody. And it required putting all of that together for a long distance race and competing on our own. And that is what you have to be able to do as a business owner. You have to say, okay, we're gonna put the best team together we can, the best boat, the best sails, or the best products, and then we have to sustain it over a long period of time. That's the core of any business success.
Yeah, reminds me of the book Who Not How. I don't know if you've read that one yet or not, but it's a really good snapshot into picking the team and making sure that they're all willing to execute the vision and the goals.
Yeah, absolutely. It's creating the team and then you being an effective leader of the team. Doesn't mean if your idea is, I know everything, I know the right thing to do in every moment, just do what I tell you and we'll be successful. I can tell you're guaranteed to fail. That is not how to be a successful leader over time. You have to create a vision of success. You have to communicate a vision of success. You have to build confidence in your team that they believe in you and the vision and they buy into it. So it's a shared vision of success. They have to work cooperatively with each other. And that is the way that the teams succeed over a longer period of time.
Great, great. Yeah. So I see your book behind you, Create the Future. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write it. What's the central message you hope readers take away from your book?
Bo, thank you for asking about it. I do a lot of writing, have been doing a lot of writing and communicating on how to be a more impactful leader. And if you I know you're doing some of this yourself. So I get asked, and I'm sure you do, and say, well, okay, you're pontificating about how to be a successful leader. Have you actually written a book about this? And I kind of roll my eyes and said, well, if I haven't written a book, does that mean you shouldn't be paying any attention to me? And at some level, that's how people think about it. And as I thought about, well, what over the course of my career as a management consultant, a scientist, I founded and ran a company for a number of years, served on board of directors. What do I really have to say that would be a unique contribution to the literature on leadership? And what I found in my work as a consultant with all sorts of public sector and private sector leaders at a very high level was that often what they're really doing is they're asking outside support for how do they make decisions. And so what I ended up deciding to write about was how do you be a more creative leader and how do you make better decisions for your company and for yourself? So that's what the book is about, create the future. And it's really it takes you it's I think of it as a guidebook. It's Think of it as the equivalence of Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. Think of this, which is about how to, be successful in your life and your career. Think about this book as the guidebook for making successful, for making better decisions for your company. So it takes you through the 5 steps of decision making. What really is the opportunity we have, perhaps a threat you're facing? What would success look like? Be creative about the real options you have, all the way through to, in the end, how do you choose what you're really going to do? And so anyway, that's what the book is about. You can get the book on Amazon. If you look at for Create the Future, Rick Williams, you'll find the book on Amazon. Or if you go to my website, which is rickwilliamsleadership.com, get more information on the book, and you can, download an introductory chapter, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, so the book is gotten, fabulous support by both business and academic leaders, both in the US and abroad. And I think if people are interested, would find it very, very helpful for their own personal guidance for when they're faced with a great opportunity or a threat, and how do they actually work through on a step-by-step basis what they're actually will do. I will say that I hope my contributions to the discussion about leadership is making an association between the decisions you make today, the choices you make today, and the future of the organization you're leading. I was surprised when I first started my work on the book, how many people didn't make that connection. They didn't. I mean, we think about, well, we make decisions, a million decisions every day. Well, I mean, what's so important about that? But the truth is that the big important decisions you're making today are your decisions about what your organization will look like tomorrow. And when I do keynote speaking and that sort of thing, I talk about the example of Polaroid as a company, which is headquartered here in the Boston, Cambridge area. And Polaroid, made an enormous amount of money on in the instant film business. So they created the concept of instant photography, and you got a picture, a copy of the picture instantly. Well, they also spent an enormous amount of money developing digital photography. But the board of the company decided, even though they could have brought digital photography to the marketplace, that they didn't want to do it because it would compete with their instant film business. And that's where they were making most of their money. So they actually said, well, we don't really want to bring this onto the marketplace and compete with our own products. A huge mistake. But that gave the window for, all of the other people, the Nikons and Canons and everybody else, to bring digital photography to the marketplace and ultimately put Polaroid out of business. They went into bankruptcy. And so that set of decisions made by the leadership of Polaroid, which they thought was sort of smart because we're not going to diminish the profitability of their film business, actually was a decision to put themselves out of business. And I talk about that as an example of the decisions that we make every day, and we don't usually think about them. And well, what does this really mean for where this company's going a year, 2 years, 5 years from now? That would have profound implications beyond just the sort of quarterly profit and loss statements that we all tend to focus on too much. So anyway, I as a quick summary of the book, and happy to tell you a little bit more about it if you're interested.
Well, so we touched on a little bit about AI at the beginning, but since we're talking about the future and really thinking about how your decisions shape the future of your organization, how do you see advancements in AI and things like automation influencing a leader's decision-making process, and how can they harness that technology to be better leaders?
Well, I think this is a very challenging question, and I'm just going to throw in because I think it's exactly the same process. I get asked about what all of the changes in the tariffs mean for leaders, because it's another one of these things that throws a big uncertainty into the strategic position of your company, in many cases, into the business model of our cases. So, if I'm going to try to struggle through, and I don't mean struggle, but I mean I'm going to go through the process. Think about this, because there's no obvious. Well, if you're in this business, you should do that. That's just not the way it is. But it's the same thing for all these tariffs. So I'm just going to make the analogy here that for complicated questions of AI, where the tariffs are, all these tariffs are going to go, the fact that we over the last 20 years have put essentially all of human learning into the cloud. That this is one of the questions of what is the role of a university at this point? Because the way we all learn things was to go to a university and he sat down there and the esteemed professors are telling us, well, here's what happened and here's what you should be knowing. The truth is that most of human learning is now available to us online, essentially for free. We can communicate with each other worldwide, essentially for free. So what does all this mean for our businesses? And AI is another example of that. So I guess I'm going to use this as a way of suggesting to your audience that I what I would start with is asking the question, is AI a threat or is it an opportunity? And think about it in that context. What is the underlying technology assumptions that you're making in your company? Are you, and I gave you the example of people who are installing solar panels on residential rooftops. Well, you say, why does AI affect that? Well, what they found was that maybe it doesn't have much to do with the installation of the solar panels on your roof, but they could do advertising to broad advertising to the public that says, we already know what you will save if you put solar panels on your roof. Call us and we'll tell you what it is. And that sounds like it's a pretty compelling message for that company to send to a homeowner that's in in Louisiana or in Massachusetts or wherever. And what the company was doing or is doing is when somebody calls up and the call the customer service person knows from the phone number where that person is calling from, and they actually know the address of that person's home. And so they can then instantly pull up a Google picture or a satellite picture of that person, literally their home and their roof on their home. And then they can talk to them about it and say, and talk to them about, at least in approximate terms, what the potential savings are. Now you would say, solar panels, what does that have to do with AI? How will AI affect that? Well, they understood that AI gave them the opportunity to use, gave them the potential to strengthen their marketing position by using it as a selling tool for their product. And I guess what I'm saying to any company owner is rethink fundamentally what your business model is, and if there is an opportunity for AI to be an enhancement or it's going to be a threat. I mean, AI, if you look at so many of the big consulting firms around the country, they hire thousands and thousands of people right out of college to do all of this market analysis that AI can do. It's going to fundamentally change the way consulting firms do their own business and what the job opportunities are for a lot of young people coming out of college. Think about, if you're in the insurance business, and well, actually, I mean, I'll just go back to another example. I was very involved in all the environmental protection stuff when I was doing my consulting work. And what you found was that all of these federal and state agencies were requiring companies to send in, reports on, well, we're monitoring our air pollution, our water pollution, we're sending all these reports. I can tell you, nobody looked at those reports. And AI now gives you the capability in real time to be looking at the reports that are coming in from, insurance claims or environmental reports. Or another example is there's an article within the last few weeks about the Chinese networks that have set up in the US to launder cash from the cartels in Mexico. And what the Chinese networks are doing is that they, in effect, buy the cash, dollars, from the cartels. And then they have a whole network of young people that are going to banks in the US and depositing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash into bank accounts that are fraudulently set up. I mean, they're fake names and all that sort of stuff. And the banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, whatever it is, they dutifully send, and I apologize, they, so the banks dutifully send in reports saying, well, we received $100,000 or $200,000 in cash, and nobody looks at the reports. So the Chinese money laundering networks are able to do that with impunity, because even though supposedly we have all of this surveillance system to look at big cash transactions, nobody's looking at the data. Anyway, I'm just giving examples of how AI can change a lot of that, and how, think about how your business can either be hurt by or helped by the capabilities of AI, to be either a threat or an enhancement of your business. That's the fundamental. And then what do you do about it? It's sort of the next step.
Yeah,
And I don't want
I like
to,
to draw the
go ahead.
analogy to the internet, right? We started off when the internet was just a thing with AOL and dial-up connections to service providers. And now the internet is ubiquitous. And what would your business be without the internet?
Right.
For one, we wouldn't be having this Zoom meeting with videos on our computer showing up. AI is going to make that same transformation. It's just in its infancy today with a chat interface, so to speak, a Q&A that you can ask a computer and get an answer from. And I've been following it for a few years now. I've done a couple of webinars for my clients to help learn about it. But I see the evolution in the short amount of time that I've been following it, and how fast that evolution has taken place. The internet's evolution was really slow. AI's is going to be exponential compared to that. So I just encourage everybody to, whether it's going to hurt you or help you, learn about it, experience it, go ask it a question. It's free, right? Everybody can go. And there's so much more now beyond just asking it questions, that if that intrigues you, go explore and see what can happen. But yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. So
So, Bo, if you don't mind, I'm going to add one thing to this. Again, I'm thinking about this from the perspective of the leaders of organizations that you and I may be fascinated by the technology and the potential of the technology, and I think it will be transformative in enormous ways we don't even fully understand now. We as human beings, we are a social animal. We depend very much on how we interact with each other on a personal basis. And I think one of the challenges that leaders have is finding that balance between, okay, the technology and Zoom and blah, 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 and keeping our organizations going in a realistic way as human beings. So COVID, I mean, I'm gonna, COVID was an incredibly illuminating time, if you're thinking about issues like this, that we as you said, we could never have had meetings like this 10 years ago. I think the challenge we have in, and you see here, I mean, I'm in the Boston area, so we have many office buildings in downtown Boston were essentially vacant. And you can still go, and it shocks me to go into these big office buildings even today, and you'll see many of the offices just vacant because the people stopped coming into the office. And the problem is that, yes, there's a lot of efficiencies that we get by being able to communicate as we're doing through Zoom and other ways, emails, texting, blah, blah, blah. But I can tell you, we are not building trusting relationships with somebody over Zoom. The only way that's happening is if we're in person together. And if you want your team to really operate on a trust basis of, I really have personal confidence in you and your commitment to this organization, to where we're going, to each other, that you're willing to make the extra steps to make our group successful, our team successful. Most of that has to be done in person. And doesn't mean I'm not advocating for giving up on Zoom by any means, but what I am saying is that as leaders, we have to understand that there's differences between just simply communicating information and building trusting teams and leadership responsibilities and leadership connections that really is mostly going to be done in person, and finding ways to make that happen as well.
great, great thoughts. Yeah. So, just to quickly wrap it up, is there any piece of advice that you'd like to leave the listeners with on making meaningful change in their organization?
Well, I guess what I'm going to do is I write a lot about issues like this, and if again I'm we're not I don't, this you're not doing a commercial thing for me and my book here, but what I have a newsletter that goes out to 50,000 plus people all over the U.S. and outside the U.S. And if you go on to my website, rickwilliamsleadership.com, you can sign up for the newsletter. Happy to send it out. It's free, and it deals with issues like this every week or every other week. I write about things like, leadership requires both decisiveness and vulnerability. I being decisive as a leader, being clear that you as a leader will make decisions, but also being vulnerable, open to learning from others and open to listening to others and hearing different points of view. So it's just one example, but I would encourage everyone to be open about the fact that their job is not to be the smartest person in the room. Their job is to ask the best questions in the room. And if I'm going to encourage people to have one takeaway, it would be that your job as the leader is to create the future for your organization by the decisions you make today. And you will make better decisions if you are open, encourage creativity, if you're open to other points of view, and then listen and learn from others, and then take all that in and make the decisions about if you're making a decision today, does that decision fully capture the goals that you're trying to achieve, your risk preferences? We haven't gotten into how you think about risk and the values you want to express for your company and yourself. And that is how you make better decisions. And you'll make better decisions by being open to learning from others, listening, discovering what your real options are, and then making the best decisions that creates the future you want for your organization.
That's awesome. It reminds me of saying, I forget where I heard it now, but it stuck with me over the years. You have two ears and one mouth, use them proportionately.
Absolutely true. It's a good way of saying it.
So just to close it off, Rick, it's let me make sure I've got it right. It's rickwilliams.com. You can learn about the book and sign up for the newsletter there. Anything
It,
else?
it's it's uh it's rickwilliamsleadership.com.
Leadership. Don't forget that
Rickwilliamsleadership.com.
leadership. I'm glad I asked. Rick Williams.
And if you go on Amazon, it's Create the Future. Create the Future. Rick Williams. There's another book called Create the Future, which is, I think it's completely different than this. But if you put it as Create the Future, Rick Williams, it'll jump up on Amazon instantly.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Rick. I really think the listeners are going to enjoy this, and they've got some great takeaways.
All right, great. Bo, it was a pleasure, and I'll think about crawfish etouffee when I think about you.
Perfect. This is Bo. Thank you so much for listening to the Bridging Success Podcast. If you are a successful business owner who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.bridgenetllc.com to sign up. If something in this episode connected with you, would you mind sharing it on social media? Just take a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or share it on your favorite social media platform. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media with the hashtag #BridgingSuccess and let them know about the show. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, and reviews, they go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, bridgenetllc.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. Find me on Facebook at /BJakins or on Instagram at BoJakins. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.